Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the gang, the one you never asked to be a part of. You are listening to the Grief Gang podcast, the show dedicated to breaking down the topic of grief, one conversation at a time, with me, your host, Amber Jeffrey. I need to shorten that down a bit. I feel like there's not enough commas in places. Welcome to this week's episode, everybody. This week, I am speaking with Stacey Heal, writer, speaker, curator, and campaigner. An all-round bad bitch. Bad bitch. Stacey joined this shit gang last year when her husband Greg died from bowel cancer. I found Stacey online before Greg had died, and I found myself following the journey of this family of four. I found myself kind of quietly rooting for this family from the sidelines and just sending my little pocket of prayers and just wishes for this family. Stacey's writing did and still does floor me. She writes so eloquently, honestly, but brutally about grief and widowhood. She cuts the shit, and that's why I totally adore her. Fuck the platitudes and who's actually going to say or ask the questions that we're all thinking. Stacey Heal, that is who. In this episode, Stacey and I go into the topics about widowhood that may not get spoken about as much. What it's like to become a carer for someone you love and the relationship dynamic changing. The potential anger that can come towards that, though it is nobody's fault. And we talk about the elephant in the room that shouldn't really be the elephant in the room. Sex. Sex, 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 and more specifically, widow's fire. That part is actually quite funny, to be honest, and we did have quite a chuckle. Stacey shares with us how, as she approached in her 40s, she learned that women tend, or it's been like proven that women tend to peak in their sex drive around that age, and then obviously the horror that her husband then dies. You know, piss takes, understatement. It's a really versatile episode. We laughed, we cried, obviously, and reflected, and we also dropped some Brené Brown gems. So without further ado, happy listening. My head in, but Stacey, I am so excited. I always find it so funny when I say, oh, I'm so excited for you to be here, because I mean, it's not really lovely reasons why everybody's here on the podcast. And people are like, oh my God, so how can you be excited to have people die in their lives so they can come on your podcast? I'm like, but I do, because I love them and I want to hear about their story and their people. But I truly am, as we were saying before, just like, it feels like we have known each other for since way back when and just been talking for so long online. And it is so wonderful to have you here. How are you?
I'm all right. And we have been talking for a very, very long time. And do you know what? I love a voice note. I remember the first time you sent me a voice note, and you were like, I really hope it's okay that I've sent you a voice note. And I was like, thank fuck, she's one of mine. Like, yes, I'm all about the voice notes. I only really correspond in voice notes. So yeah. Good.
We're creatures that we feel like we're born to fix. And that's one thing when I learned about when even in myself of kind of supporting other people in my life after we lost mum and be it my brother, and my father, whoever it was, of we're conditioned to fix. When we can't, we feel like we have failed. So when friends or whoever are supporting us are constantly, you know, trying to fill the void and messages and you think, just darling, just recognize this is shit. It's because they're so conditioned to try and fix.
Yeah. And I still do it now.
Exactly. I can't sit here and deny that I don't.
And I have to really clock myself. There's been a few things that have happened in my life in the past couple of months. There's been some things that have been going on with really, really close friends of mine. And I've had to really watch myself of not coming out with the, I've just had to rein it back in and go, no. Just fucking sit with them. Just sit down and shut up.
I don't want to sit here and even be like, people who are supporting us have it hard, because I don't think it is rocket science to support somebody who's bereaved. Like, it's really not, to just understand, especially to somebody who is close to you, to really get the time to really understand what their needs and wants are. But there are times where I think, and sometimes I read potentially things online or else, when I think, oh my God, no one's got a fucking hope in hell.
of trying to get through. And I think this is what I try to do, I attempt to do in my writing, is to maybe give a more detailed view. Because like you said, when you read stuff online of like how to help a friend going through grief or whatever, and it's very, very focused on things like, it's almost like the first week they're talking about. They're saying, take them some food because they won't know what to do. Go and clean their house. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And
long term.
I'm finding, so it's a couple of weeks now until it will be a year since Greg died.
Yeah.
I feel like I was kind of all right back then when Greg died. Well, obviously I wasn't. I was a fucking mess. But at the same time, I was running on adrenaline. Yeah. And adrenaline will really, really get you a long way.
Yeah.
What I'm finding now at a year is that all that adrenaline's gone. Yeah. And I'm like, what happens now? Yeah. Oh, no. So a really great thing that happened today is that I spoke to one of my friends, who's also a widow, actually. Mm. That is the thing about death. You bring other death friends.
You
make a lot of other the death friends. All the death friends. And I said to her, God, you know what I'm really fucking struggling with at the moment? I cannot write an invoice. I don't know what to do. I used to run a department in a university before all of this, and now I can't even write a one-page document in Word. And she wrote, and she built me an invoice tracker, an invoice template, and she even made me a little logo of my name to put in the corner. Yeah. She was like, right. And she literally did like a child step-by-step thing of instructions for me. I was like, this is what you need to do. I mean, obviously I still don't even understand it, but I'm like, this is what I need. Yeah. I need people like a year or, and she's done that because she knows. Me and Greg had like this really, like, he always called it like a panic wedding or a mouse's wedding of like, we just got married in the end when we knew he was going to die and it was just immediate family. So we never got, you know, when people go around, I mean, I'm not a materialistic person and actually I don't like loads of shit in my house.
Yeah.
I must admit, I have walked around John Lewis watching those couples go around with those little guns and going, we'll have six of those wine glasses. We'll have this, we'll have that. And thought, wow, that looks like a fun game.
Yeah, that's a fun little game then.
That's a fun little game. But maybe there's like a grief version of like, you go on this website and go, I want somebody to come and clean my bathroom on a Friday for 6 weeks. Tick. So someone can go on and go, right, brilliant.
I can do that. I can commit to that.
Yeah, I'm going to get the bleach out. I'm coming
around. This is a boss idea. This is actually a boss idea.
I think someone else would have to write them, because you know when you're still in the frame of mind of when you go, tell me, let me know if you need anything.
You know?
What? What?
Yeah. What do you mean? What?
I need everything. I need the world to stop turning for a minute because I can't. You're almost in
like a power of attorney for this. Yeah. So someone, okay, like, right. Because in contexts like this, you know, I've heard of stories of some, you know, amazing friends that have almost done this together within their own friendship groups of people, of going like, right, guys, this has happened to them. Let's all rally together, right? And almost do like a rota. So they're like, Monday, Tuesday, you're there. Wednesday, Thursday, I'm going to be here. And they rotate and stuff like that. So almost having, a friend to like do this little web page for them of like, right, currently in your house. So shit out. We need someone in the kitchen, someone from the living room, someone from the bathroom. What's your fridge saying? Right, we need to do a food shop. Oh my Christ, you've got nothing in the fridge. The kids are going hungry. Christ, the dog's not eating for 2 days. Like, someone to crisis control.
When Greg was diagnosed, when he'd had a really long break off treatment and then he went back on chemo and it was the winter and I was losing the plot.
Yeah.
And then when he died and it was seamless. Yeah. I had food delivered to my door every single day for 3 months of those separate occasions. Yeah. And it wasn't even just food. It was like they got me lovely candles and they got toys for the girls and just really lovely things that they knew that I would like as well and the food. And I think, in those instances, those first instances where you just don't know how to cook, you don't know how to eat, you don't know how to buy food, it was really useful. But, down the line, I need someone to come and sort my garden out.
Before
the winter.
People might think, you're laughing at us. So many people say to me that you laugh so much in your podcast. I'm like, because grief is fucking funny. Like, and people are funny. We lost are funny as well. So I always aim to have a good laugh and a giggle on here. But could you tell us a little bit, Stacey, about who it is that we are here to remember today? Yeah. Who is it?
Who is it? Yeah.
And his name. You've said it.
We're talking, the reason I'm here, Amber, on your podcast about grief, and the reason I know you in the beginning was because my husband, Greg Gilbert, died nearly a year ago of bowel cancer. And he was ill for, he was diagnosed 5 years previously to that. Mm-hmm. He died just shy of 5 years. But then what you don't realise when you're hoping to get to this weird goal in the future is what that 5 years will look like, because it's wonderful that we got that long, that my girls, who were very, very young when he was diagnosed, they were 1 and 3 when he was diagnosed. So they had those years with him. Yeah. But the torture, I mean, it's a very, very, very certain type of, it's a very particular seat in hell to spend 5 years watching the person you love slowly die.
Mm-hmm.
I must say that anger has been, prevalent. Rage, absolute rage, has been very, very prevalent in I had a huge amount of anger towards Greg during his entire illness, the whole 5 years, and actually I think he did towards me as well. I think, and again, that is a messy, complicated thing.
How on earth could you want to be angry towards your love, who you've
he's dying and you surely
want to be the person who looks after him, and it's like, as you and touching as well, the dynamics. We were once a couple who could, but the dynamics were equal and we were a partnership. And now
everything's changed.
Everything is on me.
Yeah. And that is a thing that is really, really not spoken about. That topsy-turvy imbalance, the anger. And I know that he was angry with me because we were trying to deal with the impossible.
Yeah.
Like, you still had to get up. You still had to get the kids ready for school. They still had to eat. We still had to go about our daily life. But at the same time thinking, you're going to die.
Yeah.
And I'm fucking angry about that. And I don't know how I'm going to do this. I don't know what to do. And I, you know, I would say that.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
He didn't deal with it brilliantly sometimes.
Mm.
I didn't deal with it brilliantly sometimes. And I know for a fact that he had a huge amount of anger towards me sometimes, because I definitely didn't. You know, you can't always be that, like, loving, soothing, understanding rock for someone to take their frustrations out on. And this is what I had to do after Greg died, and I had this so much anger, and I spoke to my therapist about it, and we sat together, and I had to put myself in that position and really think of think to myself, right, I'm going to die. I need to think about what I'm going to say to my children, what I'm going to do. And it was a pain that was like nothing I have felt before. Like, I could cry now, even
trying
to put myself in that space. And now I think he went through that.
Yeah.
And really, it wasn't like he got
it
to
wasn't
go,
pretend.
God, no. No,
yeah,
no, no.
I
can't imagine. I don't want to imagine it. He had to go through that. And I think of that now. And I thought, of course he couldn't tell me. Mm-hmm. Of course he couldn't think about it. He couldn't speak about it. I think we played our parts quite perfectly in that Greg was the kind of introverted artist in that way. Mm. And I was the kind of manic director of things. And that those were our roles in life. And I think I deal with things by becoming, like, probably quite overbearing, a bit shouty, a bit loud, a bit trying to micromanage things. And he kind of went in and become very introverted. And I can look back on those two people now and have so much empathy for both of them.
Yeah.
God, I haven't thought about it like this before.
Yeah.
And just thinking, God, you both just tried your best.
Yeah.
And that has to be enough.
Yeah. You can acknowledge that it wasn't what you wanted, but knowing that, well, we have to make do with the shit hands that we've got. I know in my end, my God, my mum wasn't, I think, fucking hell, is that really how it ended? Is that really how it all ended? Oh, no, I'm quite angry and more angry and that of, are you joking? Out of all that, that's how she went and that's how it went down. And actually going, but this is the hand you dealt with. And almost then telling myself, my at least.
Yeah.
Well, at least, Amber. You were there at the hospital, and whether that's giving yourself a bit of toxic positivity but for me, if it helps me get out of bed in the morning, especially in those early days, if that was the thing that would help me get up, brush my teeth, brush my hair, wash myself, I'm going to fucking tell myself it.
But there's a duality, isn't there? There is the duality. Like, both of those things can exist in exactly the same time. I don't think it is toxic positivity.
Yeah.
I think it's just the duality of any situation of it is absolutely shit that your mum died of a heart attack. Like, that's just a fact. That will never be any different.
Yeah.
That is just shit. But at the same time, you got to be there.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, you could look at someone who died in a car accident of how, you know, yet like you said, is this how it ends?
Yeah.
Is this how, you know, just a stupid mistake, a moment in time has ended everything.
Mm.
But then you could think, at least it was quick. At least that's different.
You will always try and find, even if you're not a positive Polly, you will always try and find that teeny little silver lining. Silver lining, for lack of a better word, but we all want hope a little bit in it. As much as we can be pessimistic, we will all seek for that tiny bit of just hope of something that this wasn't all in vain. When I think about it in my context of with hope, and when Mum was in the hospital and the doctor had the meeting in the evening, and the doctor said, you know, she looks a lot better from what she came in like, but she's not doing great. We'll keep her on life support until next Thursday, so it's just shy of 6 days, and we'll take her off breathing apparatus and see how she gets on. You know, and he went, we can all hope and hope for a miracle.
Oh God.
And then I remember there was, when he was saying all the kind of the stats and like, she looks better, this and that, I was being really pessimistic. I told myself my mum was going to die before I even saw the state she was in. I was like, she's going to die. That's it. Get used to it. She's gone. And then that him go giving me stats and giving me numbers, I was like, okay, this is good. And then, we can hope for a miracle. And I don't know. I think when I spoke with my brother, actually, like on the last episode of season three, he said that actually did give him some hope. For me, it shut down every glimmer of it. I went, what do you mean a fucking doctor is hoping for a miracle?
Oh my God. Do you know what? I'm in your camp. I'm absolutely in your camp. That's fascinating. That's really interesting to hear that, because I feel that kind of divide of information processing maybe happens like across the board. I think that very much happened in our camp, which was people will take whatever they need to out of the situation. Because you saying all of that, my interpretation of that is she's gonna die. I'm hoping that a miracle's going to happen. She's dead. Yeah, but I can understand how other people will
hear
like,
that and go,
they're keeping her on there for six days. 6 days, she's going to get better. She looks better.
Yeah.
We're talking, the word hope is in there, and we're talking about miracles.
Yeah.
So there is.
They've not given up hope, so I'm not going to.
That's interesting. Yeah. I wonder if that's to do with people's mindset, because I'm most certainly not a glass half empty person. I'm not a pessimistic person. I'm not one of those, you know, that whole a pessimist is never disappointed. I'm definitely not one of those people. I very much feel like I can't live I don't want to live in a deluded state. And I feel like, I remember when Greg was diagnosed, and all you had to do was read the very first stats of stuff of things, and there were people around me that were talking about, when Greg gets better, you know, when the girls are teenagers, you guys can do this. And I was sat there thinking,
it's torturous.
Well, it felt like this weird gaslighting, because I was like,
it's torturous, and it's dangling.
Do you believe this? Is this real? I don't understand. But then I had to understand that that's very much how it was, their coping processes. That's not for me to break.
Burst the bubble and
No, absolutely not. But it's a weird place to be. Talking about anger, about something that I had before, is that I had a lot of anger about other people's denial. And again, I feel like it's only since Greg died that I've been able to really understand other people's denial, because denial is what a wonderful place to be.
Your anger is probably quite resentment of fuck me. Yeah. I wish I could.
Yeah, absolutely. That, do you know what? That's true.
But to move on, so I've got so many questions. Oh my God, it's going to be so long. But we'll try and get into. But I remember there were so many things in like our DMs that we were speaking about. We're like, oh, we have to speak about this, we have to speak about that, this and that. This one, and I know it's something that really never gets kind of brought up, and I thought, God, it'd be perfect to speak to you about it. Widow's fire.
I knew you were going to say that. Absolutely knew you were going to say that.
And I put Widow's fire, to fuck or not to fuck? That is the question.
Brilliant. Well, do you know what? I think that other people have this as well. There just happens to be a term. I've had so many people talk to me about this sex that goes on at funerals. And I'm not talking about like the widow.
Yeah,
I mean, even
if it was the widow, I mean,
I'm sure it's happened, but although actually to be a widow at your partner's funeral is very much like being at your own wedding. I didn't have a big wedding, so I don't know, but I talked, you are the most popular person in the room and everyone wants to talk to you. And I actually had to leave the funeral in the end. I've been there. Oh God, how many hours have we been there? Maybe 10 hours.
Oh my God.
And I lost my voice. I totally lost my voice. And I had to go home. But I've definitely heard of a lot of other people having sex at funerals, because it is a natural response to grief and pain. It's for comfort. Yeah. It's for safety. Yeah. It's basically the flip side of the same coin that is death, because it's life.
Yeah.
It is the epitome of what life is, that energy between two people, and it makes you feel alive.
Yeah.
Here's my particular problem with the whole thing is that I feel it, and I actually felt it before Greg died.
Yeah.
Of this, probably like a couple of, when he was in hospice, it was this fire is the right word. It's like this burning intensity. I suppose it's to do with distraction. Mm. It's to do with an expenditure of energy.
Energy, yeah.
Of wanting to feel something other than fear.
Yeah.
Of wanting to feel alive, because you actually feel a little bit like you're dying at the same time.
Yeah.
The problem I have is that I am just this ridiculous romantic that I can't do it. I wish that, I've said this to loads of my friends, I wish that it was like 20 years ago for me. So I'm 42.
Mm.
I wish it was like 20 years ago for me, where you used to have people that you could like fuck buddies.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Where you had
friends of benefits.
Friends of benefits, where it would be like you had friends that you might go out, have a night out, and that it would be like this thing where it didn't, you knew it was safe, you were comfortable with them, it was a really safe thing, and there were no strings, and that was great.
Yeah.
I don't have anyone like that anymore. I don't have, all my friends are married, with partners.
Yeah.
There's kids. Like, there's kids in my house.
There's just kids everywhere.
There's fucking kids everywhere. And everyone's tired. It's really fucking tired.
No one's got the energy now.
No one's got the energy. And so I'm like, what's the answer to this? The answer is actually the vibrator that I bought.
Yeah, absolutely. The womanizer.
Yeah, just before Greg died. However, that's not the same, because it is about that. But then you're kind of torn. I am, unfortunately in this situation, I am just a ridiculous, hopeless, just romantic person. And I can't go on Tinder.
And yeah, as much as you say, like, you are just kind of looking for that, and that's I want to ask where you're at now, and where you're thinking.
Yeah, I can't do it, and it makes me feel quite like
queasy.
Queasy, it does. Yeah. It makes me feel quite sick to think about it, and like, it's such a weird thing. It's quite compartmentalized in my head, but I feel quite stuck. Do you know what it feels like? Mm. A bit like being a teenage girl.
Yeah.
When you don't have a boyfriend yet.
Yeah.
And you've got all these feelings and emotions that you're like, oh, I need to get put stuff them out.
Yeah.
But I don't have a boyfriend. And I don't want a boyfriend.
Yeah, and that's the part. Yeah, you kind of a boyfriend goes, oh.
Yeah, it's not I'm not in a place that I don't want that. Like, the thought of like going out on a date and being like, hi, you know, like that small getting talk of like, I don't want that. Especially because it's like, oh, guess what? I talk about my dead husband all the time at this moment. At this moment in time, yeah. I'm writing a book about it.
Yeah.
I'm just not in that place. But then...
But then knowing that this fire, quite literally, and I think what maybe some people, when they're thinking about, the widow's fire, what my initial thought was, it's just like you're just horny, you just wanted to fuck.
Yes.
But then actually, but then it is actually so much more, to me, hearing you speak, then that is bigger. Like, you have these emotions, these feelings that, you did once with somebody that you love and in kinship, and now you're just there with it all again, and it has to go somewhere. Like, it's...
And also, I think
it's more than just being horny.
It's really, really complicated. Mm. And that's why maybe people don't talk about it, because
I think it's
really hard to explain. It's really nuanced and complicated, as with all these topics within grief. And also, I think that women get a bad rap if they talk about their own
sexuality
and just pleasure, because it's not like you're saying, I'm looking for a relationship, I really want to be intimate with someone. Like, women are allowed to say they want a relationship, but no women are really allowed to say, I definitely don't want a relationship, but I definitely want to have sex.
Do you know who puts it so perfect? I mean, we might follow her, Olivia Jordan Cornelius.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Lovely Olivia. She did a video, I remember, quite a while ago. And for me, for somebody who has no experience in this, depicted what, and everyone who I speak with, I try and share it with them. And I say, and she basically, she has married and had a little boy, her first boy. And
is that after
her husband Cameron died. And she must have put a photo of her husband and little boy and somebody, or her pregnancy actually, and someone went at her and was like, shame on you, this is a nap. Being like, his grave's not even cold, and it was like, oh my fucking god.
Shame on you for carrying on your life.
And wanting to be loved. Yeah. And so she put a video up, and she was basically like going at me a little bit, so eloquently, as she does. I'll send this to you as well. And she was like, you know, my husband, he's not an ex-boyfriend, he's still my husband. I've got like two husbands in a way. And she was like, it's what she say, it's not happily ever after, it's happiness after. And I went, whoo! I was like, yeah, because it's not the happily ever after. It's not that you weren't in happily ever after before, potentially, and that it was a nightmare. It was meant to be happily ever after, but this is happiness after.
But do you know what gets to me about things like that? All the people that ever comment on anything like that about anybody's life says it from the comfort of their own intact home and family, and have literally no toe in the waters of grief.
No.
I saw an article about Steve Bland getting married again.
Yes, yeah. Wedding.
Do you know what?
Who looks resembling like his wife. Oh,
pricks.
Evil.
What
evil.
Absolute pricks. And it's, again, it's like,
that's what we're like gossiping on this. I love this.
I know.
We're like rallying everyone, like, fuck Daily Mail. Fuck them all.
Have you noticed that this is basically just our DMs?
I know it is.
This is basically just us talking to each other in our DMs. going at the women. Bringing up a picture of Rachel to be like, oh, don't they look similar? Fuck off. Yeah. Like, you, and all of these people are doing this with love, for love, with real, really big and deep battle scars that they're taking through this, but they're choosing love.
Yeah.
And you're going at them. I've got zero time for it.
But to end, I wanted to ask a random question to see what you think of what's a TV show or film that you think depicts widowhood bang on, if there is one?
Do you know what? I haven't actually explored widowhood in films.
Mm.
And I think that's really, or famous. I can tell you one that I didn't like.
Go for it. Yeah.
I really didn't enjoy Ricky Gervais's depiction of becoming a widower in Afterlife.
Okay. Wow, that's very interesting. And I do get a bit part of it. I feel like because it's the only thing on big TV about grief. It felt like it had a lot of weight to it. And now everyone's watching, oh, this is what it's really like. And I was like,
yeah. I think that I didn't like it because I felt it definitely depicted one side of grief.
Mm-hmm.
I think it depicted the kind of, I think what he did well was that mindless element to it. There's a lot of scenes where he's just kind of staring into space, or he's sitting at his desk staring into space, or sat on his sofa staring into space. I think that that was depicted very well. But I think what I found when I watched it was that it lacked the multitude. It focused very, very much on sadness.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit on anger, that kind of retaliation, like when they go to that yoga class and he is so angry with the noises that he just calls him a cunt in front of the whole class.
Off. Yeah.
Yeah. like that kind of inability to cope with stuff.
Yeah.
But it was so focused on sadness. And I thought that, and yeah, he probably could, yeah, they couldn't cover everything. And it was just from that particular character's point of view. But for me, I didn't see the reactionary nature, the manic nature, the fun, the laughing, the increased.
Well, you would see the laughter and then it would be like drop. Yeah. I thought in the recent season they would have gone more a little bit into like living alongside. And I think the last season I was a bit disappointed.
Yeah, I enjoyed it because I definitely enjoyed seeing somebody depict something and you really understanding it and going,
nodding,
I understand. But I suppose that's why, and I suppose that's why I write, and this is probably why you do this podcast, is we need all these different facets of a topic that isn't talked about, and all of our experiences are different.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose the more voices there are that explore these very different facets, the better, and it will make, because I'm sure some people would have watched that and thought, oh, wow, that's an absolute depiction of how I feel. That's exactly how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose the more voices, better.
Absolutely. The more we keep talking, the more having and not having the one size fits all, because then when people do, you know, people listen to my podcast or read anything, go, oh, that's not a bit like me. But then they know there's multiple other options as well. So having options, we are coming from such a long way of where there are just one size fits all. And if it doesn't suit you, you're the problem. Yeah. It's like, okay, that doesn't work or that doesn't resonate. Here is a bunch of other. And it's a sad reality, though, that there are so many people out here doing that work. But also great that people have the options now, because when I think back 6 years ago, my gosh, there was nothing really like this. And it's wonderful to see so many people in their own pain. And reason you spoke on the whole pain into purpose stuff, but if they feel compelled to want to create something out of this tragedy that they've been through. And if you don't, that's absolutely fine as well.
Of course. Of
absolutely
course.
Fine.
Of course. And I suppose, actually, maybe I need to rethink my example, because you're right about, I suppose, my very natural way of dealing with things has been, I suppose, is pain into purpose. I felt very strongly, very organically, without having to kind of convince myself of that writing was what I wanted to do. I wanted to advocate for people. But that's not, and so I think that's why I didn't see myself in Ricky Gervais's character. But actually, there's nothing wrong. Like, actually, if you can do nothing with it, of course,
and be okay with that. I think I used to before, probably even in the early days of grief gang, be like, this is turning my pain into purpose, and maybe semi pity people who didn't. But then actually going, Man, you know what? If that's absolutely fine with you, it's why? Why must be? And it all feeds back into, again, another top random of like productivity and hustle culture of we must make something out of everything. And actually, some things can just be put down. Like not everything that's, everything has to be monetized. Everything has to be like made into a hobby. And everything has to be sometimes a tragedy is just a tragedy. And nothing great has to come out of it, or like try and search for that silver lining. Sometimes really fucking shit things happen and you can't then go and create like a really wonderful book out of it, or a podcast or a fucking workshop series out of it. Sometimes it's fucking shit.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I would really hate to think that I think this is quite prevalent in the cancer community. Like, you know, when you see people like raising thousands of pounds or doing marathons and things, and other people are going, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, I can't get out of bed.
Yeah.
Should I be doing that?
Yeah.
Like the thought of other people looking on going, how do you do that? Like, I hate that thought.
Or and feeling is like, it's because they're not like, what does that, their grief then mean for their person? That's where a lot of times more pain into purpose projects, whatever may happen, is because potentially the thought of not doing it might be a depiction of, and people might think, well, they clearly don't really like care or miss their person that much because they're not going out and doing loads of fundraising for the charity that they were in under hospice of. And it's like, oh my God, like you can honor and respect your person in whatever way to you. Like, you don't have to go and run like fucking 30 kilometers, whatever it is, to go and do it. It is okay. And that sounds so hypocritical for me when I've spoken about it. I've always been quite careful of how I word it, because people looking in might think, well, that's exactly what you've done, Amber. You've created a podcast and turned your pain into purpose. I'm like, yeah, it has. And it did. And it was my get up and go. But my God, it's been my thing that's debilitated me some days. I think, oh, fuck me. It would be nice. And then but then I look at other people, I just think they just keep themselves to themselves. But it's all, the perspective has changed. And I would never, ever, judge anybody who just wants to sit with their grief, maybe personally, internally. Not everything has to be for in vain.
Yeah.
That's what I found.
I agree. Yeah.
Oh, well, Stacey, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I mean, I had no doubt that we would actually have a laugh and a giggle and just put all the world's wrongs to rights. Obviously, it's what we do. This is literally our DMs, just in podcast
form. It is literally our conversations in DMs, absolutely. And I've managed, so I've got a notepad next to me, so I've got a new business idea.
Yeah.
Which is great. I'll be working on that. I've got a list of things to watch.
Yeah, and then articles to read.
I need articles to read. So I'm busy.
We're busy.
I've got an invoice that I've got to learn.
Yeah,
how to write. God, it never stops.
It never stops. Well, thank you so much, Stacey and Grief Gang. Thank you so much. Thank you for tuning into this week's episode. I hope listening to Stacey, her story, her wisdom has left you with something to think about. You can find Stacey on Instagram under Stacey_heal. So that is H-E-A-L-E. If you've also lost a partner, I highly recommend checking out these accounts, as they, to me, do such great work in supporting fellow widows. They are at Widows Lost and Found, at Karen Sutton Widow Coach, at Widowed and Young, at The Positive Widow, and a personal fave, a lovely friend of mine, at olivia.jordan.cornelius. I will put them all in the footnotes of this episode if you're like, what the hell, Amber, how do you spell that, how you know I can't understand you. I'll put them all in the footnotes. So for now, big love, and I will see you next week.
Mom. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.